Next Step 672, April 22nd, 2021.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. We reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
You ever get a jingle in your head and you can't get it out? That's how I'm starting off today's podcast. I can't get it out of my head. I heard this jingle this morning about structured settlements and cash and it's a beautiful jingle. I'm not going to repeat it because I'm scared if I do, I'll only fortify something that I don't want to exist in my head, especially for the next few minutes as we get through this podcast. How are you? I hope everyone's doing well. We are in the week of April 24th, a very important week for Armenians, wherever they may be, throughout the whole world. And again, tragically, we are, as Armenians, looking for other people to validate a reality. So much so that we're going out and we're saying, please see to it that you validate. You tell us that this is really something that happened. And I'm very, very disappointed that the biggest sign that you see at Armenian churches here, at least here in the Western Diocese, are these giant signs that saying, yes, it's a genocide. Like, what? Yeah, yes, it's a genocide, and you got to believe it. Well, yeah, okay. I mean, there's nobody else who puts up with this, right? Isn't that true? There is absolutely nobody else in the world who will put up with something like this. Can you imagine going up to the Jews and telling them that, well, you need to prove that the Holocaust happened? The absolute proof that Armenia went through a genocide is your existence, wherever you are, listening to my voice. If you are Armenian, that's the proof of the genocide, right? Because unless you are living in Western Armenia right now, and I doubt you're listening to me if you're living in Western Armenia, unless you are living there, you are a descendant of somebody who did live there. You are a descendant of somebody who lived there. And you are, wherever you may be, in the United States, in Africa, in Egypt. Yes, that Egypt is Africa. I know. That's why I say it. And if you're in the Middle East, if you happen to be in South America, wherever you are, Canada, yes, did I say America? North America, yes, that would include the Canadians up there too. And of course, oh, don't let me forget the Australians, wherever you are, if you are alive as an Armenian, right, that's proof that the genocide happened because you're not supposed to be there. We had our own land. It was there between the Caspian and Black Seas. I mean, we had our own land. We were right there at the base of Mount Ararat. And today, we're all over the world. We're all over the world. And the diaspora exists because of an attempted genocide. They attempted to finish off the Armenians, and Armenians fled. I remember I have a cousin who lives in South America. And before his father died, so his father would be my grandmother's cousin. I'm saying that, in other words, it's in that generation, a generation who, as children, came over from the genocide. And before he passed away, I had the good fortune of meeting him. He lived in Buenos Aires. And for one of the cousins' baptisms, we went down there to Buenos Aires, and I had this chance to meet with the head of the family, the patriarch, my grandmother's cousin. And I asked him, I said, "So what brought the family to Buenos Aires? I mean, you know, I know that there was a movement. People went to the Middle East. I know from the Middle East, they did go from Greece over to France. I know some of them came over to America, but South America, what was South America all about? And why is there so many, there's so many Armenians in South America? It's kind of a cool little Armenian little enclave over there, if you will. It's a street called Armenia Street. And on that street is the church, and across from it are different political party centers, Armenian political parties, whether it's the Ramgavar, the Tashnaksutyun, or the Hunchagians. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there were three centers right across. And I said, "So what brought the family to Buenos Aires?" And he told me, he says, "My father, during the genocide," he says, "as they were fleeing," he says, "he took a globe in his hand." In other words, a small little globe that has the map of the world. And he found himself on that globe, namely in historic Armenia, what today the Turks call Turkey. And he pointed to that and he says, "Where is the farthest place that I can go to be away from these killer Turks?" That's what he said. I'm just sharing this with you, okay? And he looked at the globe and he says, "Okay, South America, Buenos Aires. As far as you can get from the Turks." And throughout the world, I mean, there's Armenians in all of these different places. I know my grandparents, they made the journey, the trek from the Middle East over to France, from France over to America. And everybody has a unique story. So much so that all of the Armenians outside of Western Armenia right now are in their adopted homes because of this genocide. And still we're sitting around, we're telling people, "Will you please recognize the genocide?" Why? You know, these politicians, we don't get it. We don't get it. I know here in this country, we just went from a Donald Trump to a Biden. Before the Donald Trump, those of you who've been with us on The Next Step know how much I really cared about the Obama administration until I realized that these are all just politicians. In other words, they will say what they need to do to what? Get elected. Yes, that's the first job that politicians have. It's no different than any institution. It's self-preservation. And that's really one of the stumbling blocks when it comes to Christianity. It is backed by an institution. And this goes back, you read some of Leo Tolstoy's work when he was talking about his own religion. What is my religion? And he talks about this pure Christianity. It's what C.S. Lewis, what Chesterton, these people were talking about when he talks about Christian orthodoxy. It's the hoopla. It's wiping away the hoopla to see what the story is all about. And so when we're sitting here and we're asking other people to acknowledge the genocide, you have to ask, who are those other people? Who do you want to acknowledge? Are they politicians? Well, I understand. If the president of the United States acknowledges it, you've got the most powerful man in the world acknowledging it, and that carries a weight. But most powerful in what terms? And that's up for debate. I know people will say, well, those are the only terms that really do matter. It's the political terms. I will take exception with you. I do. I take exception with you that is not the ultimate. That is not the only thing that really, really matters. I mean, you know, you got a politician, really. Okay, I understand. Yeah, he represents the power base. He represents the only superpower in the world. That's a big consideration. And the president of the United States acknowledges the genocide. That's a very, very big weight that comes to the genocide. I completely understand that. But it's not the only thing. What about the Pope? What about Pope Francis, who represents 1 billion Catholics? What about Pope John Paul II? What about Pope Benedict? Do these people matter? Well, I guess not, when it comes down to it, because we're still out there looking for people to say, yes, this did happen. And what it does is, all of a sudden, psychologically, it makes you start thinking about it, like, wait, why isn't my word enough? Well, obviously, you need to prove stuff. But I want you to think about it in this way, right? Think about when you go to a store, you see that apples are $2, you see that oranges are $2, right? You say, okay, I want to buy some apples and oranges. Immediately, you know you need $4, right? Immediately. You don't need to go and prove that 2 plus 2 equals 4. In other words, you don't need to count on your fingers, right? You don't need to say, okay, wait, I got two fingers here, 1, 2. And then I got two fingers over here, that's 3 and 4. So that, okay, I'll need $4 to buy the apples and oranges. No. Ridiculous, right? Because you've already gone through that exercise. In the learning process, you have already been through there. You've done that. Been there, done that. I know that 2 plus 2 equals 4. So every time that I see these images of 2 plus 2, I don't need to think about that this is $4, right? In other words, you know, it's a done deal. I already know that that's 4. Now, I want you to think about this. Just imagine what a waste of time it would be if every time that I need to come up with the number 4 as a result of 2 plus 2. How many kids are going to sit at the table? Well, we've got 2 from the cousins and we got 2 of our own. They're going to be sitting at the table. How many people are going to be at the table? Well, I've got, let me count them, 1, 2 cousins, and then 2 of our own, 1, 2. Now let me count them, 1, 2, 3, 4. So I'm going to have 4 kids sitting at the table. It's ridiculous. You're laughing, right? Of course, you should be laughing. I'm laughing. It's ridiculous. You don't have to reprove it. We know that 2 plus 2 equals 4. Yeah, if you're in some other dimension, maybe. Maybe if there's a space-time warp, maybe 2 plus 2 might equal 5. But here in this real world that we all exist in, 2 plus 2 equals 4. It's the same with the genocide. The Armenian genocide happened. It's been proven by the mere fact that we're around. It's been proven by the mere fact that the LA Times, the New York Times, every newspaper in the United States of America being the example of a free press during the 19 teens, I guess it would be the 1915 to 1923 specifically, all documented it. It's been proven because the ambassador of the United States was there in Turkey. He documented it. In the person of Morgenthau, right? We've heard so many people who have accepted. We've had great countries. We've had people. We've had religious leaders. Okay, we don't need to keep proving it. But that's what we're doing when we go out there and we say, it's a genocide. Yes, it is. Of course it is. Of course. We don't need to reprove it. But here's the bigger challenge. And this is really the scary part. What do you do now? What's the next step? In fact, for all intents and purposes, this show began with that title, Next Step, because it was necessary to go to the next step. That's the basis on which we built the In His Shoes. In His Shoes is an answer to the next step. What is the next step after you've recognized it? Let's get beyond this idea that we have to keep proving it to people. The documentation is there. It has been proven. It's done. It's a finished deal. Okay, get it documented. You've got presidents. You've got religious leaders. People are saying it. But I will not stand for this idea of let's debate it and let's talk about it and let's share it with people and get your opinion on it. It's done. I don't need your opinion on is 2 plus 2 equal 4. It's not an opinion thing, right? 2 + 2 = 4. It's the same way with the Armenian Genocide. But what do we do now? What's the next step? Where do we go from here? And that's the bigger issue. I want you to think about this. Just a couple days ago, George Floyd, his murder trial finished. And they convicted the officer, Chauvin is his name. They convicted him of 2 counts of murder and 1 count of manslaughter. And these are just technical descriptions of killing a person. How do you kill a person, whether it's murder or manslaughter? But here's the important thing for us, for our conversation here today. I want you to think about what happened there. And if you're not familiar with the George Floyd case, if you're not familiar with it, how about this? Okay, we'll put some links on the show notes. Check them out. Okay, you have to be familiar with it. But this is the man who died during a police stop, where the police officer literally put a knee on his neck, and the man begged for air. Begged for his mother, says, "I'm dying," and basically in front of the world. The world watched via a small video that was captured at that moment. The world watched and saw this man get the life sucked out of him. And so the police officer was convicted, and they mentioned that it was the first time that, you know, a police officer was being convicted of murder in that particular state of another person on which he had tried to do his police duties. It's kind of interesting, right? It's not like he just went out and murdered. He was doing his police duties, he claims, and that was really the defense of it. I was doing my duties, and this guy just happened to die. And it didn't hold. So it was the first time that a policeman had been convicted of murder. Secondly, it was the first time that police officers, his colleagues, police officers, testified against him. So he was convicted. George Floyd died May 25th. And what we heard, and this is the point why I'm bringing this up, what we heard people saying is justice has been served. I want you to think about that, okay? Has justice been served? And I want to share with you Keith Ellison, the prosecutor. He was from the prosecutor. Let's see, what is his title? Attorney General Keith Ellison of Minnesota. He said, "I would not call this decision justice, because justice implies true restoration. But it is accountability." Let me read that again, okay? This is important, okay? "I would not call this decision justice, because justice implies true restoration, but it is accountability." When I heard that, I said, wow, there's our connection. There's our connection. What is justice? What is justice? And really, as Christians, that should be our ideal. You're looking for justice. You're looking for that justice as a way of reconciling with the evil that's taking place in the world. And you get recognition, and then what's the next step? Because this is the common thing that people ask. Okay, what if Turkey asks, what if Turkey recognizes, then what? Then what? Well, what are you going to ask for? Are they going to give you the lands back? Well, you know that's not going to happen. And suppose it did happen. Who's going to occupy those lands, right? I mean, there's so many what ifs. So you take it a step at a time. And the step at a time is the first step, is recognize it. Recognize it, and that is acknowledgement, which leads to what? Accountability, from which you springboard into restitution. It's a very complex situation. What I am bringing up today is just some food for thought, really, to think about these things, because it never ceases to amaze me how blindly we go out there and we protest things without really thinking beyond it. But it makes people feel good, you know, to be part of a larger community, to go out there and protest an evil that you know that can't come and hurt you too. It's very nice how we protest these things here in the United States or in free worlds, whether it's Australia and Buenos Aires or in Canada or anything. And you know that the Turk is not there, right? Can you do this same thing in Istanbul? And I think those people who are out there in Istanbul or in Ankara and protesting it, these are the people that really have the courage to be able to stand up and protest against the people who are responsible for covering it up. So how about there? Let's put a bookmark in it for right now. We take a break every week, give you a little bit of time to think about and digest what was said. We'll take a little break right now and go to the song of the day. And we'll come back to talk a little bit more about what's next, about justice, about the genocide on the eve of Armenian Martyrs Day. Here's today's song. Of the same name by Haig Yazjan. I'll have a link on today's show notes. You could check it out. Yeah, it's important to remember that so many people have expressed the Armenian Genocide in many different ways, whether it's film or as early as, you know, the early books that came out, The Cross and the Crescent and things that are all but forgotten these days. I am really kind of disappointed that some of the great treasures that we have get get forgotten. For instance, Passage to Ararat. You won't believe back in the 1970s, when that came out by Michael Arlen, who was a famous and renowned writer on an international level. Of course, we always remember William Saroyan, but we had other writers too. But today, you talk about Passage to Ararat, people don't even know what that is. In the same way, when I remember when we first saw Beast on the Moon, how inspiring it was. And it actually made so many connections to me on a personal level, because I had heard these stories, the Beast on the Moon stories, as a child growing up with genocide survivors. Anyway, I will have a link on today's show notes. I'll invite you to check it out and all of his good music. As I always do, okay? Let's get back to the show. Welcome back. We are talking today about justice. We are talking about acknowledgement of the genocide. The Armenian Genocide happens to be the 106th year of what? Well, no, it's not the 106th year of the genocide. It's actually 100 years. The genocide began officially on April 24, 1915, when they rounded up the intelligentsia and they brought them together, and there was that first roundup. That was the beginning of the genocide. But actually, this is 2021. Actually, 1921, the genocide was in full swing. It was happening exactly 100 years ago. It actually technically was from a period of time from 1915 to 1923. Some would argue it was 1922, but whatever the case, it wasn't just a one-day event where 1.5 million people died. And I think these are important to say. As much as we know that that can't possibly be the case, it's sometimes presented as such. So you get the idea that, like some atomic bomb must have fallen on these people, and all of a sudden 1.5 million people were annihilated. No, it was the creation of the diaspora, too. It was the mass exodus of people. Last Sunday, here in the Western Diocese, I was given a very special honor. And I don't mind saying this. I don't like talking about the honors, but this one was a very special one for me. The Archbishop appointed me as the preacher, Karozic, of the Western Diocese. And I was able to share a sermon last Sunday about this. And I will have a link on today's show notes so you can check it out. It happens to be in the Armenian language mainly. There is a small summary in English, but the English entire text is going to be available next week and is going to be distributed. So apparently, during the Ottoman years, within the Ottoman Empire, a very famous and noteworthy Armenian cleric named Malachi Ormanian. You might know him from writing the history of the Armenian Church. He's got a book. Actually, it's kind of one of the staples. It's called The Church of Armenia. And I think 1908, or it's sometime in the early 20th century, he wrote that. Anyway, Malachi Ormanian was appointed as the preacher, as the Karozic, there in Istanbul. And you could imagine how difficult it might have been within the Ottoman Empire for him to preach. And so this basic tradition of having a message come out for the month to be given, to be reflected upon, to be setting the pace for the discussions during the month is the idea behind this Karozic or Zeinjäger, it's for the voice of the church. That is, Eminence had in mind and asked if I would share some ideas. So I'm very honored in this respect to be able to set a pace, to set this discussion, to set to these messages, these topics, these themes in place, in motion. And so last Sunday, I reflected upon the idea of the cross, especially right after Easter, where you have Easter talking about the resurrection of Christ. It has always bothered me that we as Armenians have just heard this incredible message of Christ has risen, and then we're ready to talk about the genocide and look at our crucifixion. It seems like we have the order mixed up, right? Shouldn't it be crucifixion that leads to resurrection, not resurrection that leads to crucifixion? And that seems obvious, but we aren't expressing it that way. And so I spoke about this, about the necessity of understanding the order of the events, that it takes a crucifixion to get to a resurrection. And we shouldn't be scared of those crucifixion. The order of events is very important, essentially, right? That we understand that, you know, it's the crucifixion that leads to resurrection. So think about the crucifixion. And think about Christ's words, that if somebody is going to follow me, let him deny himself and pick up his cross. It is a message of suffering. It is a message of moving forward. And this goes contrary to everything that we are taught as people, especially in our quest to better our lives. We want to dismiss the crucifixions. And so what I shared in a beautiful story that happened to me in my life, I've shared it with you as my Next Step listeners, this idea that it took a outsider, namely a Catholicos from the Indian Orthodox Church, to come and teach this lesson to us, that it's very important that we understand that that cross is a part of the Christian life. And we as Armenians have had our share of that cross, and that becomes now a mission for us to share that cross. It's as simple as that. And now, here's the part that really gets to me, is that we as a Christian church have this. We have this message. We know this message. We know the importance of this message. Why aren't we spreading it? Why aren't we talking about it? Why aren't we sharing this with people? That the road to resurrection is through sacrifice, is through giving, is through sharing. And here we are on April 24th, the perfect opportunity to share this story, to talk about the importance of that cross. But what do? We keep going back to looking for other people to validate it. I mean, you look at what Armenians are concerned with today. Local in Los Angeles area, LA Mayor Garcetti. Listen to this. This is out of a local Armenian newspaper. LA Mayor Garcetti calls on Biden to recognize the Armenian genocide. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti called on President Joe Biden to recognize the Armenian genocide. It's time to speak the truth. It's time to remember tragedies of history so that we do not repeat them. It's time for all of us, for my friend President Biden, to leaders across LA, the United States, and around the world, to declare with one voice, we recognize the Armenian genocide. Okay, that's great. You know what this is? This is rhetoric. Who the hell is this man? He's the mayor of a city. He's the mayor of a city. Put it in perspective. Yes, second biggest city in the United States. Yes, that carries some weight. But he's also a politician. To get to that position, he had to make some promises here and there. And he knows his constituency. He knows who's here. And so he makes this statement, and it's beautiful. It makes a lot of sense, and we applaud it. It sounds really great. What are we asking for? What are you asking for? You know, if we're going to talk about the mayor of Los Angeles, so let's go on that level, okay? Let's talk about here in Los Angeles. We have the Armenian community here. How about the Archbishop of the Armenian community? Legitimate, right? Large Armenian community outside of Yerevan, okay? What does he have to say? Well, then they're saying, well, he's only validating something for himself. Okay, let's talk about the Archbishop of the Roman Catholic community. How about that? Archbishop Jose Gomez. Do you know that he recently, just a couple days ago, spoke about social justice and the role of the church, where that justice is and what the role of the church is? It is a 15-minute video that I'm going to ask you to watch because it happens to be addressing issues that are exactly in parallel to what we as Armenians need to be concerned with. And fortunately, believe it or not, it shouldn't have been like this, but it is recorded and it is presented in a video statement because of the trial that was taking place for Chauvin, for the George Floyd protests and everything. This conference was going to take place of the Roman Catholic bishops in Minnesota, and they had to make it into a virtual one. And so Archbishop Gomez made a video, and I'm going to put it on today's show notes. Just take a look at it, okay? Just listen to what he has to say. He's talking about social justice. He's talking about justice, issues that you and I need to be thinking about. Why do I bring all this up? Because when we're thinking about the Armenian genocide, it's very easy for us to become a people unto ourselves and be consumed with the genocide as if it belongs only to us. No, the injustice belongs to everybody. It belongs to a planet. It belongs to a planet, and therefore their injustices also belong to us. It's basically the tenet of walking in the shoes of others, understanding your pain is mine, my pain is yours. We are asking people to look at our pain without taking the extra added step, to use the metaphor of in his shoes, without taking the extra added step of saying, I will understand your pain. And so today, right now, as we're speaking, we know that there are children at the United States-Mexican border, right? We know that they're there, they're being sent there by their parents. The child's only concern is, where is my mommy and my daddy? The parents' concern is, let's get them into a system where they could be safe, something better for my child than me. I mean, these are just natural feelings. We as Armenians have been there. We've been there. We know what it's like to be on the outside trying to get in and look for a safe haven. Why aren't we talking about that? You look at what happened to George Floyd. You talk about hatred. You talk about prejudice. You talk about Black Lives Matter. Armenians know that better than anybody else because we saw the ultimate manifestation of that hatred, of that prejudice, in the form of genocide. Are we talking about that? Are we out there talking about these things? Are we out there being the first witnesses? And so when I make a call and I say that we need to be the first witnesses of the crucifixion, this is what I'm talking about. It's for us to get out of our small little bubble and understand that everything that we talk about in the genocide has something to do with what we see in this world. And when we start doing that, then we start understanding that we have something to contribute to this conversation. We're not standing out there with our hands out and saying, hey, help me, I want you to recognize. No, it's already been recognized. I need to move it forward. And that's what our mission as an Armenian people, Armenian Christians, has to be. Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult, I know. It's so much easier to just sit back and say, you know, in Luke, Jesus said this, and St. Paul wrote to the Corinthians in the second chapter on the fourth verse, and before he did that, he wrote to the Galatians, and he talked about this and that. And you know what? Jeremiah was telling us that we should do, these are all nice. But really, do you need to prove 2 + 2 = 4? That's what it comes down to. We know what is right. We know 2 + 2 = 4. In the same way, we know that a genocide has taken place. What we need to do is have a voice in the world conversation of things going on. Because after all, aren't we the same people that had genocide happen to and a continuation of the genocide? You see, when we talk about world situations, when we are in that level of talking on a larger global scale, then we are when we see like what happened just a few months ago, right? Where you have Azerbaijan backed by Turkey, an ally of the United States, invade and call war upon a small area populated by all Armenians, desecrate their churches, their historic presence in that area. And then on top of it, you get the president of Turkey, another ally of the United States. And these allies are great, you know. What kind of allies are they? One of them being Israel, who supplies the weapons for this invasion and for this killing and for this war. And you get the president of Turkey coming up into and December 10th. Can't forget that one, right? Coming into Turkey. Excuse me, into Baku, Azerbaijan capital, and praising Enver Pasha. Enver Pasha is one of the architects of the Armenian genocide 1915. So you've got the president of today's Turkey praising him. And you know what? Like I said earlier, who else puts up with this? Who else puts up with this? Imagine somebody praising the architects of the Jewish Holocaust. What would happen? It'd be shut down immediately, right? But this is an ally of the United States praising an architect of the Armenian genocide, and America is quiet about it. This is bizarre. It really is bizarre, right? I mean, especially what we're going through in a world that is just plagued with this kind of racism, with this kind of hatred. We as Armenians have something to contribute. And so when we enter into a conversation on the world scale, then when these things happen, then they can point and they could say, oh yes, you are the Armenians, not the ones with your hands out and saying, please see my case. You're the Armenians who are there and contributing to the conversation about justice, a justice that takes place on the streets where George Floyd is killed. You're the Armenians who spoke out against the border incident in Mexico and the United States. You're the Armenians who are talking about the need for us to establish means by which we can be diplomatic, we can avoid wars, we can see peace. Ah, yes, you are those people. Yes, we better pay attention. Yes, we better be out there. Yes, we better make sure that nothing happens to these people. Because look, you could talk that this is maybe politics. Okay, Father Voskin, you're just basically telling us another way of politics. Do the good stuff so that people will take care of you politically. Yes, that in a sense, you can look at it that way. You could look at it as the story of the manager who made sure that he used his means by which he had to make friends for himself in the world. Or you can look at it in a very strict religious sense. As our Lord Jesus Christ said, set your mind on God's kingdom, and all else will come to you. It doesn't get any more basic than that, right? Trust God. But first, to trust God, we have to be willing to be the church of God. Willing to be the hands of God, willing to be the voice of God, willing to be able to see everybody as part of this beautiful planet, of a beautiful humanity that loves and cares for one another, beyond skin tone, beyond ethnic boundaries, beyond political and cultural boundaries, to understand in everyone God is alive. When we start doing that, we start understanding that we are part of a world conversation and not just a small little island that sort of pops up every April 24th and then slowly goes underwater for a few more months and then pops up again. No, we have to be there all the time. We have to be a landmass that's always there. Our voice has to always be there. The cross of Christ always has to be there, and we have to be the carriers of that cross. Let's take a break right now, okay, and let Susie make her announcement. I'm going to come back and tie it all together, along with a couple other announcements, okay? Here's Susie.
Susie here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you, all of our listeners, for your support, your love, your friendship, and your prayers. I want to conclude today with a few announcements. First of all, I did tell you I was going to be at certain places. I'll correct that in a minute. But let me start off with remembering a very special person. Father Levon Apelian passed away into his eternal rest. He was a priest from Jerusalem. He had left the priesthood about 35 years ago. At my ordination, he stood up as my sponsor. Father Levon was really one of those brilliant intellectual priests of the Armenian Church. Having grown up in Jerusalem, he knew the background, he knew the liturgics. I was honored to know him. I was honored to have him serve as the sponsor, what's called the Harda Vilag, at my ordination. We note his passing of natural causes, from what I understand, at the age of 88. This week, April 24th, there's going to be all kinds of events taking place throughout the world. Please get involved in something. It's important to make some noise. It's important to keep it going. But more importantly, it's like what I said throughout the entire podcast. Yeah, make your noise on April 24th. But don't diminish or don't quiet it down on April 25th, on April 26th. Get out there and do the work that God has intended for us to do. In other words, to preach to people about love, to preach to people about the loss of hatred, to talk about us as examples of what can happen when hatred goes awry. The ultimate manifestation of hatred being genocide. We have a unique obligation to the world to bring that to the presence of people, because it is happening, not just in Armenia. It happened throughout the 20th century in so many places, whether it was in Cambodia, in Darfur, in Nazi Germany, and of course in Rwanda, and continued into the 21st century with Darfur. These are examples where hatred goes awry. And these are not just wars. These are not just killings, and shouldn't say just, but genocide makes you realize that, yeah, those are just. Genocide is a program. This is very important that you understand and you share this with people. In the case of genocide, the government says that you have to kill these people. Otherwise, you are committing a crime by not killing these people. Ah, did you know that? Yeah. If you do not kill Armenians, said the Turks, you are in violation Yeah, violation of the law. And you could not participate in the political or in the military life of the country. Your job was to go out there and kill Armenians. It's a systematic program of annihilation. Genocide, yeah. That's what that's all about. And so this is great that we got all kinds of politicians looking at it. Please, please, this weekend and in your life, look beyond the politicians and realize that this is really a special and unique calling for all of us, one which God has asked us to be participant in. And like I said, check out our show notes today. There'll be some links, especially to the sermon last week, so you get an idea of where we're going with this idea. It really serves as the basis and the cornerstone for the rest of the year, as we're going to be talking about different themes as part of this Karozich, or the voice of the church, as I shared with you earlier today. That does it for today's show this weekend. On Saturday, April 24th, I will be in the morning at the march, and I'll be one of the speakers for the United Students March in Hollywood, California. I will also be at the St. Garabed Church that evening for a presentation. I'll be talking about all kinds of genocides that take place after the Armenian Genocide and connecting them all together, as I always do for you. In other words, if you're a Next Step listener, you do not have to come out to the desert. How about that? you know where we're going with that. I would love to see you, but yes, that's what I'm going to be doing this weekend, from Hollywood to the desert. Hey, listen, we're going to call it a day for right now. May the memory of the sainted martyrs, may their guidance, may their love that they shared with the world always inspire us to do what is right, to do what is pleasing in God's sight, to work for justice and to work for peace. That's what it comes down to. And that's my wish for all of us today. On this podcast, on the eve of Armenian Genocide commemoration, we will regroup next week and we'll be going into a new direction. So for today, on behalf of our producer, Susie, and on behalf of myself, Father Vasquez, we look forward to seeing you again next week, as we take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.